The Old Testament prophet Daniel, along with his companions Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were taken from conquered Jerusalem and moved to Babylon, the epicenter of Nebuchadnezzar's ruthless, capricious, and totalitarian empire. This is the After Dinner Scholar, Wyoming Catholic College's weekly podcast about the great books and the liberal arts. I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. The religions of the Babylonian Empire and the Persian Empire that followed it were, from a Jewish point of view, idolatry, pure and simple. Bowing down to a giant golden image, praying only to the king, were unacceptable to those who worshipped the Lord, the God of Israel. Daniel and his friends, however, were captives in those empires. Because of their intelligence and the grace of God, they were given special privileges and responsibilities as part of the government of those empires. But they could have been demoted from satrap to slave in about 2 seconds, or from satrap to pile of hot ashes, or from satrap to lion food in just a bit longer than 2 seconds. At the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought this past June, I lectured about the meaning of courage in the Bible, and then led a discussion about courage in the Book of Daniel. My colleague, Professor Kyle Washit, was kind enough to interview me on the topic of courage.
So, Dr. Tonkowicz, tell us about courage in the Bible.
Well, courage is certainly there in the Bible. It's from cover to cover, but there's no exact equivalent word. There's no one-for-one correspondence with a word for courage. I've looked at Joshua and Deuteronomy, where Moses tells Joshua, and then God tells Joshua, and the people tell Joshua, to be strong and of good courage. And you have in that, I think, a Hebrew parallelism. It's saying the same thing in two slightly different ways to fill out the meaning. The words mean be stout, be strong, be mighty, be self-possessed. The Septuagint uses the Greek word for manliness, and I think really not as opposed to being womanly, but as opposed to being a child. It's a call to be mature, be willing to do the things that need to be done. Courage in the Bible is to the end of obeying God in specific tasks. Joshua is going to lead the people into the promised land. They're going to fight. They need to be strong and of good courage. Later in the Bible, David tells Solomon to build the temple. He tells him to be strong and good and of good courage in order to do this task in obedience to God. We're to be strong and good courage in obeying the law, in obeying God in all things. And that's not a task, rather that's a lifestyle. And we can be strong and of good courage, according to the scriptures, because God is mighty. God has that characteristic. We're to be strong, Paul says, in the Lord and in his mighty power. That's mighty there is the same, is in Greek, the same word, iskus, that's used back at the Greek translation of the Old Testament for the Hebrew word. So we can be courageous because God is mighty and God is for us, not against us.
Great. So now you were framing that, as you said, specifically in terms of Joshua, Deuteronomy, the Exodus, people, the Israelites coming into the Promised Land. What happens to courage when the Israelites get blown apart by their enemies? The Babylonians come in, they take them over. And how maybe what generally happens, and then how do we see that especially explained or embodied in the story of Daniel?
Well, I think we see remarkable examples in the scripture, in the description of that Babylonian captivity, of great courage. And we see it beginning in Daniel chapter 1. Daniel is a young man, as are his friends who get renamed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they're very bright, they're attractive, and Nebuchadnezzar, nobody's dummy, figures these bright, attractive people could foment rebellion against me. So I will bring them to Babylon. I will school them in order to be good Babylonians. And I'll put them to work for me in my government. And, you know, all will be well. Daniel gets there and he objects to the food he's being served in the royal court. He's sharing the king's meals and he doesn't want to do that. Now, it's not clear why. I suspect it's because the meat was probably sacrificed to idols before it was put on the king's plate. And Daniel wants nothing to do with that. It was very clear to the people of Judah, now rightly called Jews, that the reason they were thrown out of Jerusalem to begin with was because they disobeyed the law. And somehow this young man Daniel, somehow in his upbringing, understood that and knew the law. I mean, I presume his parents taught him these things and taught him that this is the highest priority, to keep the law. And so Daniel talks to the steward in charge of the young men and said, I don't want to eat this anymore. I just want vegetables, thank you. And he says, well, I'm not sure I can do that. He favors Daniel. That's God's providence. And Daniel said, well, try me out and my friends. And of course, after 10 days, they're healthier than everybody else. All is well, and the king is none the wiser. So you had this, you know, from the very start, you have this willingness to be stout, to stand firm, to obey God in all things. Then later, you find King Nebuchadnezzar sets up some kind of golden idol. It's hard to say exactly what it is. It's narrow and very tall, and it's gold, and it's out there glistening in the sun. And he says, when you hear the music, when the band starts, everybody has to bow down to this thing. Well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refuse to do that. So somebody rats them out. Somebody tattles. And they're in trouble before the king. I said, when this happens, you're to fall down and worship. And they refuse to do it. And he said, well, you'll be burned up in the fiery furnace, which I take to be a kiln that was heated up for firing pottery, extremely hot. And they say to him, look, king, God can save us, but if God doesn't save us, well, we're not going to bow down before your idol anyway. We'll just die. And of course, he throws them into the furnace, and the flames go up, and he looks in, and it's not just three of them, but there are four of them in there. And they come out with not a hair burned, nothing singed, nothing smelling of smoke. And then finally, you have the example of Daniel in the reign of King Cyrus. Dirty politics are nothing new. People think they are. They're not. Daniel is a man of great importance and high office, and people are jealous of him. And they know that three times a day he turns to Jerusalem and prays. Three times a day, seven times a day, I think.
Yeah.
Often.
We'll both often.
So they go to the king and said, tell you what, king, you're just such a great guy. We think that there should be an edict, the law of the Medes and the Persians, that can never be changed or amended, that anyone who prays to any god except you is to be thrown into the lion's den. And the king, for reasons that are unclear, because Cyrus seems to have been a rather wise king, agrees to this idiotic idea. And of course, Daniel hears about it and he said, huh, well, time for prayer. He goes up to his room and he prays. And he gets ratted out, they tattle, and the king doesn't have any choice. He has to throw him into the lion's den. Of course, in the lion's den, Daniel faces that, and the Lord closes the mouths of the lions. So it's here are these Hebrews in a hostile place, in a pagan empire. Nebuchadnezzar was mercurial, tyrannical, and yet they maintain their faith. And they maintain their way of life, and they maintain their religious and ethnic identity in the face of that. And it's specifically their courage that allows them to do that.
I was struck by the fact that within the Israelite setting, the first story of courage for Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel involves observing the dietary laws. Mm-hmm. That seems to be what leads into these really heroic witnesses of a fiery furnace or a lion's den. That first and foremost, courage is, as you framed it for all of the scripture, the real commitment to God's law and the strength in observing that law.
Yeah, and in small things.
Yeah, exactly. So it starts with small things. Well before we're in the lion's den, we're talking about eating vegetables.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I want to mention with regard to that is that courage in certainly within that Babylonian captivity period, you see the connection between courage and redemption. The Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego come out of the fiery furnace, and Nebuchadnezzar says, don't anyone mess with these people or their God. This is a true God, a God who can save from the flames even. Well, that created enormous breathing space for the Jews who were in Babylon and in captivity. The people of Israel, the northern tribes, the so-called lost tribes, went to Assyria and they were simply assimilated. They didn't get lost. They dissolved into the local peoples. The Jews didn't do that. The Judahites didn't do that. And it's partly because that gave breathing space. Then we find the same thing with Daniel. He comes out of the lion's den. Now, Cyrus does throw the people who were responsible for this into the lion's den and they don't come out alive. But Cyrus also says, Daniel's God is the God we need to pray to. And there's more breathing space. And I suspect Cyrus's willingness to send Jews back to Jerusalem was partly based on the fact that Daniel was true to his faith, God saved him, and it wasn't just God saving Daniel, it was in saving Daniel, God created space and created redemption for his whole people. Daniel is certainly not the only example of courage in the scriptures, but the stories of life in the Babylonian captivity give us clear examples of men and women, think of Esther, believing God and obeying God's commandments in an unfriendly and sometimes hostile culture. Courage involved risk, including the risk of death. God can deliver us, said Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but even if he doesn't, we will obey him. The result was more than deliverance. The result was redemption for the Jewish people and perhaps for untold numbers of Babylonians and Persians who witnessed God's work. And it's precisely this kind of courage that we need today, and precisely this kind of courage that we need to teach our children. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.